Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to meet the former Undersecretary of the Veterans Health Administration and learn about Month of the Military Child. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
Purple is a color that symbolizes all branches of our military. Nationwide, more than 2 million children have a parent serving in the armed forces. As a tribute to the children of our brave men and women who serve, people across the nation wear purple every year on Purple Up Day. In Minnesota, 22,000 men and women are currently serving in the military. Our military-connected children bravely face the uncertainty of their parents' safety when we are away, as well as the challenge of reintegration when they return. It's important for these military-connected youth to know their nation and community stands by to support them. This April, please join us in Purple Up to support our military kids. For more information on Purple Up Day and other military-connected youth events, please visit the Minnesota National Guard Youth Programs page on Facebook.
Mankey, for more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. We're recording today from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center in the office of Director Pat Kelly. Director Kelly, thanks for hosting us today. It's an interesting day, and I know you've got some guests and some things going on.
Well, Tom, it's fun to have you in the office. I don't think we've recorded a show from here. We recorded several shows from our VA, but it's nice having you back.
Flag Atrium is a great place to record a show, and today we're here because there's going to be a book signing at the Minneapolis VA, and you've got a special guest for us to meet.
Yeah, we're really honored. Dr. Richard Stone is our guest today. Dr. Stone is retired from the Army, and I think important to your listening audience, he served as the Army's Deputy Surgeon General and Deputy Commanding General of Support for U.S. Army MedCom. Received a number of awards. I won't go through all of them because we don't have that much time, but he received, his awards include the Legion of Merit, Bronze Star, Combat Action Badge, and he was a member of the Department of Defense Recovering a Warrior Task Force from 2011 to 2015. I got to know Dr. Stone when he was the executive in charge of the Veterans Health Administration. That's the guy who runs VA healthcare. Up until July of 2021. And we were the fortunate recipients here in Minneapolis of many of the things that Dr. Stone initiated in his time when he was leading VA healthcare, to include many of our high reliability organization components, patient safety, and of course, he led us through the COVID pandemic, which we're still experiencing some of that, but I'm hoping we're on the back end. But that was Dr. Stone's unbelievably great work that supported us and helped us to be successful.
Dr. Stone, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Tom, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Nice to meet you here in Director Kelly's office. And, sir, could you tell us a little bit about your military career? I understand that at the end of it, you topped out as a major general in the Army.
I did. I was the Deputy Surgeon General of the Army, and Pat's already gone over for your listeners what I did during that time. But I started as a pretty typical Army reservist and was leading a nice career in the Midwest up in Michigan, where I was practicing medicine and doing some work with some Catholic nonprofit healthcare systems until September 11th. And after September 11th, I spent the majority of the next 14 years on active duty voluntarily. My expertise was combat healthcare delivery and the design of combat healthcare systems. And then I stayed on and gradually rose up the ranks. Spent a long tour early in the war in Afghanistan as we really worked to help the Afghans stabilize their healthcare system, as well as to take care of our combat casualties.
So, Dr. Stone, your entire civilian and military career, you spent working to take care of our veterans and to figure out how to provide good medical care.
That's true. I retired from the military in early 2014 and came on board in 2016 with the VA as the Principal Deputy Undersecretary. My job as the Principal Deputy Undersecretary, I was hired. We were pulling ourselves out of the Phoenix access crisis and access to health care. I came in as a disruptor to try and get access to care where it should be. Look, I'm a veteran. You've already heard I'm a combat veteran. I get my health care from the VA. I wanted this system to work well. And part of that was self-serving, because I come from a long line of service in my family, and most of my relatives get their care in VAs around the nation. So I came on in 16 and 17 as a disruptor and access, and then came back in 18 through 21 to lead the VA at the request of the administration, both the Trump administration and then the Biden administration. I stayed on for the first 6 months.
So, sir, your first of your two tours with the VA was after you completed your military service?
It was. It was after I retired. I'd gone out into industry. I missed government service. And when I got the opportunity to come back into the system and take care of veterans, I thought it was the logical thing to do.
So, Doctor and General, were you recruited to the VA at the first time around? Or did an opportunity present itself?
No, I was recruited. I got a call. I was working at that time for one of the big contracting companies, consulting companies. I was doing high reliability, zero defect culture in the Air Force, for the Air Force as a private contractor. And I was helping the Surgeon General of the Air Force move the Air Force medical care system to a zero harm culture. And I know that sounds silly to your listeners, but there's harm in healthcare. And it's high-risk operations, and you have to run those operations really to very high standards in order to prevent harm. And all of your listeners know or have experiences where something didn't go quite right with healthcare. And what we've tried to do here at the VA, and I was doing at that time with the Air Force, was to move to a zero-defect culture. Think of running a nuclear power plant or aircraft cockpit operations. It's called high reliability operations. And what we've tried to do here, and this is why they recruited me, why my phone rang, was they wanted to bring those concepts here to the VA. So things like the access crisis couldn't happen again.
We're speaking with Dr. Richard Stone out at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Doctor, it sounds like they recruited you for some special projects the first time around. And then did you retire from the VA and go back into practice for a while?
Yes, that's exactly what happened. I left after a couple of years. My view of disruptors is disruptors in any organization don't make a lot of friends. They take action very quickly. And therefore, disruptors should come and go quickly, and that's what I did. And after I was gone for a year, they asked me to come back to lead the organization.
Well, Doctor, in my vocabulary, we call those fixers because, as you know, in business, there are things that go wrong, and there are certain people that can come in and fix those things and make the businesses run well. And sounds like the VA healthcare system knows how to do that as well. Then in 2018, did you get recruited to come back a second time?
I did, and the phone rang, and they said that they needed someone to lead the organization as the acting undersecretary or executive in charge, and I ended doing that for 3 years. And I came here to institute the Mission Act, which most of your veteran listeners know fundamentally changed how we buy care in the community and what ability veterans have to go to other places besides the VA. But it redefined what the Choice Act, and the Mission Act was a very complex law. And so I came to start up the Mission Act, but then the pandemic came, and frankly, the pandemic really led us into a whole different area of work that I think we'll talk about.
So a couple of good items there, sir. Apparently you weren't a bad disruptor since they asked you to come back. And secondly, how could you possibly know in 2018 that we were going to get a 100-year pandemic in 2020?
Yeah, that's why I wrote this book that's brought me to Minneapolis, Save Every Life You Can. I wrote the book because it memorializes a once-in-a-hundred-year pandemic and what it was to lead the 363,000 employees of the VA and the great medical centers that surround the United States and really did so much to support not only veterans but civilians during that time. So I told that story in the book.
So, Doctor, most of us think back and we think that pandemic started about the end of the first quarter 2020, but now looking back, there were indications that there was something wrong late in 2019. When was the VA generally aware that we were going to be up against a problem?
December of 19, the emergency operations lead who does some security screening called me at the holidays, and I thought he was calling to wish me a Merry Christmas, and he said, we've got a problem in China. here's what I think is going to happen. I think it's going to spread across the world. And here's the risk that we have. And we started working over the holidays in 19, including at this site, looking at our emergency supply system, looking at our ability to sustain ourselves to make sure that we were ready to go. And then we began deploying, not until March, various personnel to support. Remember when the people were coming off of cruise ships?
Yes, sir.
On any given day in the world, there are over 600,000 souls afloat on cruise ships around the world. 250,000 of those were going to end up back in the United States, and we were trying to figure out what we were going to do with them and how we were going to keep them healthy. And what if there was large amounts of COVID that was coming off of those ships? And luckily, that did not happen. But even the few thousand that got housed on military bases substantially challenged the delivery system in the DOD, and we went and helped the DOD take care of veterans that were part of that group.
And, Director, as I recall, early in 2020, the first quarter, we were talking about PPE, personal protection equipment, and did we have enough? And the Minnesota National Guard had some up in Camp Ripley, and they were distributing it. It was quite a first quarter, second quarter of 2020.
You know, one of the good reasons to read that I've read Dr. Stone's book is to sort of relive some of those memories. Not that they were good memories, but there's a lot of things to learn in that. And so I think as a responder, you know, the VA, with some really great community partners, we did a terrific job in doing that. But those early days required a lot of renovations to the hospital, personal protective equipment that we didn't have.
New policies,
all kinds of sort of changing 180 degrees from the work that we were doing previously. It ended up to be a real success story, but it was we had some long days of those early days to get that right.
Gentlemen, we'll have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more with Dr. Richard Stone and Director Pat Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We're recording today from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center in the office of Director Pat Kelly. And, Director, you introduced us to Dr. Richard Stone, and we're going to ask him in a little bit because he wrote a book called Save Every Life You Can, A Reflection on Leadership and Saving Lives During the COVID-19 Pandemic. But before we get back, and he's going to do some book signing out here today. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to talk to you just for a couple of minutes about COVID. You and I have talked about what that's done to you as a hospital, what it's done to us as veterans. But one of the things is it forced you to use technology to stay in touch with your veterans, to take care of your veterans when they couldn't come and see you face-to-face. And we figured out a lot of ways to do that. And you and I have talked about this before. Those things are going to stay as we move forward because it helps make the hospital and the doctors and nurses more efficient.
You know, one of the things that as the largest integrated healthcare system in the country, we were really very well pre-positioned to respond with the technology that we applied during COVID. But we have always sort of led the world in telehealth. You know, that's something that the VA has been steeped in for many, many years. And so when we faced the restrictions related to COVID, you know, we had the people with the skills and the knowledge to implement some of those new technologies that we had been using previously, but then we accelerated them during COVID. And so all of a sudden, you know, when family members couldn't visit their loved ones in the hospital, we were able to adapt to that technology so that while they couldn't go in the rooms, we had a means to support those family members so that they could be with their loved one, even if they couldn't physically be there.
The technology helped improve a lot of that. And Dr. Stone, as a patient here at the Minneapolis VA, we've got MyHealth eVet where I can contact my doctors. I can order up my prescriptions online and they send them to me. I can have a telephone interview. I can have a video interview. There's so many things that I didn't know about before the pandemic that have become tools that we use every day at the VA. Are these things widespread all over the country now, sir, now that I hope we're coming out of the VA, out of the COVID?
I think Pat is completely correct that the VA was leading the nation when the pandemic started in these kind of capabilities. Most of us as patients began to utilize those things more once the pandemic began. Now, the rest of American healthcare has caught up a bit, but the sustainment of those things has done beautifully within the VA. Many healthcare systems around the nation have begun to give up some of those that technology. Now, our veterans are extremely satisfied with video conferencing, the ability to get a hold of people electronically. What we do find is that telephone-based visits go down a bit when veterans can get back in. People want interaction in which you can see the reaction of the person that you're talking to. And just think about, you know, a telephone call versus a video call. It's an entirely different dynamics. But we continue to invest in these systems and grow these systems. I'm really pleased at the investments that are within the budgets that will continue to expand this type of monitoring technology. You know, there's more than 200,000 veterans today being cared for in their home that would otherwise be institutionalized, either because of healthcare problems or cognitive decline issues. They're staying at home. I think not one of your listeners wouldn't say, I'd rather stay home as long as I can rather than go into a nursing home or an extended care facility or an acute care facility. The VA is at the forefront of that type of care and the teams that care for them. And I think the beauty of this Minneapolis VA is it is a centerpiece as a model of advanced care, what we call 1A care, for the rest of the nation.
And Dr. Sloan, I understand that your specialty is dermatology. We had on VA some your doctors, Director Kelly, from here, and they told us how that the veterans during the COVID pandemic could go to the outpatient clinics, and those clinics could tune into the dermatology experts here at the medical center, and they could get an initial look at some kind of problem. And with that initial look, then they could figure out, do you need to come down and see us? Where do we go from here? And so it's allowed you, Director Kelly, to deliver that expertise to your outpatient clinics.
You know, and Tom, and taking off on Dr. Stone's point, the other beauty of the VA is that we are unencumbered by reimbursement requirements. So in the private sector, there's worries about, are we going to get paid for this and how much is this going to cost? Our only mission is to take care of veterans, and we have been well-funded to do that. And so we're not worried about how we're going to get paid for those procedures. We're only worried about providing the best care for veterans, and that's a good place to be when you're in a healthcare system.
We're speaking with Director Pat Kelly and Dr. Richard Stone from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center on Minnesota Military Radio. Dr. Stone, we've kind of skipped over, but you've written this book based on your most recent tour of duty with the VA healthcare system called Save Every Life You Can, A Reflection on Leadership and Saving Lives During the COVID-19 Pandemic. I haven't read it yet, sir, but is that book meant to share that experience and to help us get ready for the next 100-year pandemic?
Yeah, Tom, I think exactly that. One of the books that has always been in my library is a book called The Great Influenza, which was written about the 1918 pandemic that really in the United States got propagated out of Kansas in the mobilization of the American Army for World War I and then spread across the nation and cost so many lives. I used that book at the beginning of the pandemic to help my senior leadership team. In fact, I recommended it to everybody who were leaders in the system to learn the lessons of what happened in 1918. I wrote this book. I wouldn't presume that it was as comprehensive as that great book that was written after the 1918 pandemic. But what this book, what Save Every Life You Can, is to help a leader who 20, 30, 50 years from now is facing the same things that I did and Pat did as leaders of this healthcare system, and make sure that we don't repeat the errors that just faced us as a nation. You know, the nation really struggled with this pandemic, and there was lots of controversy, there was lots of politics. But for us that were in the trenches trying to save as many lives as we could, we tried to look past all of those things, and I think we're quite successful. You look at the survival rate from COVID in these hospitals. When I say that, the VA hospitals, it's extraordinary. The survival rate in our nursing homes was extraordinary in comparison to civilian nursing homes. There's something we did right here, and I review that in the book. I also talk about why the people of the VA are so extraordinary and why they're so committed to this mission. You know, of the 250,000 people working for the VA, a third of them are veterans like you and I are. I was the first combat veteran to lead the VA in 30 years, and I just happened to be here as a combat experienced veteran at the time of this challenge. That, to me, is extraordinary, and that's why we wrote the book. And it's been received really well as really helping to learn these the lessons learned of this extraordinary challenge to the world's public health system.
Hopefully, sir, that'll be a roadmap for the next emergency, the next pandemic, to accelerate our response to it and put it out as quickly as possible. Doctor, we just got a couple of minutes left. What's the future of the VA healthcare system? Is it intact? Is it solid? Is it, from my view, it's running very, very well, but I'm spoiled. I'm here in the Minneapolis VA, and they're one of the best in the country.
And I get my care in the Washington, D.C. VA, and I have the same experience, Tom, you do. I get all my care there. I'm happy. If I need to go out, they send me out. So what's the status of this system? I believe this is the strongest healthcare system in the nation. I also believe it is of the highest quality. Not perfect, but it is of the highest quality. Dartmouth University released a study a couple of years ago looking at 121 major markets around the nation where VA operates, showing that the VA exceeds in quality in every one of those markets, the civilian healthcare delivery system. Pat said, gee, we're well-funded. Congress has been great on a bipartisan basis to give the funding the Secretary has asked for, and great leaders like Pat have asked for in their budgets. They've gotten what they needed to do the job to care for all of us as veterans. I'm also really pleased at the PACT Act and what it has included in for those of us that were burn pit exposed, just like your generation of veteran got Agent Orange exposed. I was burn pit exposed and have had multiple deaths in my last deployment group from various burn pit related injuries. Now, I think we're in a situation where the system is strong and the future is very strong, as long as we can hire good people willing to come to work for us.
And keep good people in Congress to back up that system, sir. Dr. Stone, thanks for joining us today. And Director Kelly, just got a few seconds left. Are you hiring?
We're always hiring, Tom. Go to Google, look up the Minneapolis VA, sign up for a job at the VA. Even if you're in rural Minnesota, we have community-based clinics, and we're always hiring.
And you're always looking for more volunteers.
Always.
Gentlemen, it's been just a pleasure to talk to you both today from Director Kelly's office. Thanks for joining us on Minnesota Military Radio. That was Dr. Richard Stone at Director Pat Kelly's office from Minneapolis VA Medical Center on Minnesota Military Radio. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to talk about the month of the military child. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is committed to reducing the impact of our agency's operations on the environment and society. We have implemented several practices throughout the agency to support our sustainability goals of reducing energy, water, and fossil fuel consumption. We are also increasing solid waste diversion and sustainable procurement and decreasing greenhouse gas emissions. MDVA has reduced energy use per square foot nearly 24% since 2013 by installing energy-efficient LED light bulbs, updating our heating and cooling systems, and replacing old doors and windows. We have reduced fossil fuel consumption by purchasing hybrid and electric vehicles and replacing gasoline-powered landscaping equipment with electric versions. MDVA has decreased our water consumption by 10% since 2017 by installing native plantings, reducing irrigation schedules, and by installing low-flow fixtures. We also reuse stormwater to irrigate two of our cemeteries, reducing the use of groundwater. To reduce waste, we send our food scraps and paper towels to a compost facility at our Minneapolis and Hastings veterans' homes. Additionally, MDVA is currently a host site for the Minnesota Green Corps member who is focused on increasing the sustainability procurement and educating our staff on solid waste diversion. Finally, to decrease greenhouse gas emissions, two MDVA locations receive electricity from renewable sources and will be installing on-site solar at the new Redwood Falls Veterans Cemetery.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said at the opening, we're going to talk about the Month of the Military Child, and joining me now to talk about that is Melissa Egan, who is the Minnesota National Guard's Child and Youth Program Coordinator, and Sarah Derman, Director of Community Relations, Mall of America. Ladies, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Mel, I'm going to start with you. I understand that you've been involved working with youth for like 20 years.
Yeah, it has been 20 years, yep, and six with the military youth and their families.
And you've been with the Minnesota National Guard since 2017, are you enjoying your job over there?
I definitely am, yes. They're a great group of youth and families and have been really welcoming and supporting of our program.
And Sarah, I think we met once when we were out to the mall and did a show from there some years back. I was trying to figure out whether or not you'd been on the show, but we determined not yet. But here you are today, first time in the studio. How do you like it?
It's great. Really exciting. Just so happy to be here with you.
And you are the Director of Community Relations for Mall of America. Can you tell us what that means?
Sure thing. So I've been with the mall. It'll be 12 years in May. And I say I have the best job in the building as I get to be the face and representation for the mall to give back to our community. So I work on all of our philanthropy efforts as well as our community partnerships.
And I know the mall supports a lot of different organizations. You don't really get a good chance to tell everybody how much you do you?
No. We are kind of humble over there. It's fun to kind of get out of the office and off the property and share a little bit about the fun things that we are passionate about and supporting in our community.
Well, I think we're going to have to be careful. She looks like she's want to kind of come back here and want to be in the studio again.
Yeah, she might want to take our job.
So, Mel, can you explain to us, why is it important to recognize our military youth?
So I think one thing that people don't understand is the National Guard is a huge time commitment for our soldiers. We think of deployments is the only time they're gone from home. That's just not true anymore. They go off to schools, to drills, to annual training, and deployments. So mom or dad may be gone for special occasions, prom or their championship baseball game, just special times in their life. So these youth really sacrifice a lot of their time with mom and dad so that mom and dad can serve their country. And so we just want to kind of take the time to recognize that we recognize their sacrifices and what they go through.
So, Mel, I wonder, a lot of our military youth go to regular schools mm-hmm. with all the children their own age, but very few military children go to those schools. And I imagine they know who each other are. Do they feel different when they're out there with children that don't have to experience deployments?
I think so, from what the youth have told us. And we have actually had youth go to the same school that didn't realize their parents were both in the military. So it's not always a connection that's out there out front. So we just kind of ask schools and educators and those people to give us space for military kids to talk about what they go through and connect them with other military kids. They may not be aware that they both, you know, have parents that serve.
We're talking about Month of the Military Child with Melissa Egan from the Minnesota National Guard and Sarah Derman from Mall of America on Minnesota Military Radio. And Sarah, I want to come to you quickly. I know that the Mall of America is a Beyond the Yellow Ribbon company, and you take that seriously.
We sure do. I would say it's probably one of our most proud achievements that we've accomplished, and we have accomplished a lot at the mall. But it is something that all of our team members acknowledge and would not have happened without the passion and support of our leadership team. So we've all come together. We worked a year and a half on our action plan to propose to the states to become a proclaimed Yellow Ribbon company. And that happened back in 2014, I believe. So we've created many internal policies as well as outward facing community programs and events that we support, like Purple Up Day.
Sarah, do you do some special things to try to hire veterans at the Mall of America?
We sure do. So a couple of the new policies that we adopted when we were getting proclaimed, one was that every single currently serving military member, as well as every veteran that applies for a job, immediately gets offered an interview. And secondly, something I find really cool is that we have in-house resume decoders for us, so to say. So we have folks that are able to break down their military resumes and turn them into civilian language for the rest of us that are managing the positions to really see what these people have accomplished and what they're capable of doing.
So you can figure out what their military expertise and knowledge is and put that in English. You can say, here's a good position for you, and let's try to work with that.
You've got it.
Mel, I want to come to you. Month of the Military Child, what does that mean for the Minnesota Guard?
It means that April, we just take the time to recognize the military youth and the sacrifices that they have made and make them feel appreciated. So we have a lot of different things going on throughout the month, not only the Purple Up event, but we have a photo contest with some great prizes sponsored by USO. We have an art contest with Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Lionel Lakes supporting that. And then the governor has graciously agreed to supply some letters to our military youth, just recognizing their sacrifices and appreciating them through letters from him.
And we'll get into that a little more in the next segment. Sarah, I know you're supporting at Mall of America, Month of the Military Child. What's going on at the mall?
Yeah, we couldn't be more excited. This is actually our ninth year of hosting the event. And if you look back, year one, we distributed 500 wristbands for attendees. And this year, we're over 1,500 wristbands for families to come out. So what folks can expect when they get to the Mall of America for this event is admission to Nickelodeon Universe, a Build-A-Bear experience, and then an open house party for them where there's a DJ, there's face painting, there's vendor booths, and we couldn't go without having some appearances by our special friends at Nickelodeon. So you may pop into a Ninja Turtle or see Dora or Diego roaming around. So we cannot think of a better opportunity to open up our house, our property, for these military families and especially these kids to be acknowledged and celebrated for all of their sacrifices.
Are you sure you got enough room out there for 1,500 of them?
I think so. We always will make room. They're a priority for us.
All right. And when does this happen?
So it will be taking place on
April 14th.
Thank you.
April 14th, starting at noon until 6 p.m., an open house style event, and then the wristbands can be used for the remainder of the mall opening.
So, Mel, you and your team are going to be out there?
Yes, we will. We will be hosting the open house. The Mall of America has graciously donated a space, a spot, so it's a private event for our military families, and we make it feel as private as we can, and then they go out and enjoy the wristbands and Build-A-Bear experience that USAA has donated.
Ladies, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the Month of the Military Child and some events coming up for this month. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today about the Month of the Military Child with Melissa Egan from the Minnesota National Guard with the Child and Youth Program. She is the coordinator of that program. And Sarah Derman, who is the Director of Community Relations, Mall of America, and they've been supporting Month of the Military Child for almost a decade. And ladies, we want to talk now about Purple Up. Mel, what is Purple Up? What's that mean?
Purple Up. So purple is the color that we wear to represent all branches. And in the month of April, it has been proclaimed the month of the military child. So we wear purple to show our support for military youth and the sacrifices they make as their parents serve in the military.
And Sarah, we want to talk once again about the Month of the Military Child open house at Mall of America on April 14th. Coming up real quick from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. And do you want everybody to come out purpled up?
We sure do. We look forward to this day every single year. Our staff, it's one of our favorite days to see all of these kiddos that really do sacrifice and go without that recognition so often. So having them out on property and creating memories and having little moments of joy, there's nothing better that we see at Mall of America than that.
Somehow I'm visualizing some Vikings purple shirts out there that day because everybody's got one, unless they're a Green Bay fan. Can you walk us through April 14th, noon to 6 p.m.? What all goes on out there?
Sure. So we start with an open house that is in a private space. We want these kids and the families to really feel like VIPs for the day. So they get to go into a behind-the-scenes private space and enjoy some snacks and beverages and face painting, coloring sheets, special guest appearances by some Nickelodeon characters, as well as face painting and a really great resource center for them as well. So we love that opportunity. And then after that, we send them out to adventure around the mall. So whether it's using their wristband, that's good all day for them to go ride rides in Nickelodeon Universe, or head over to Build-A-Bear and have a Build-A-Bear experience where they get to pick out a buddy, build it, and bring it home with them.
Sarah, you look pretty excited about this. You must look forward to this every year.
We sure do. It truly is one of the best days of the year at Mall of America.
Mel, I want to come back to you. You're going to be there and purpled up. I know this. But for our military kids, if they'd like to get a letter from the governor, how do they go about that?
Yep. So they can get a letter from the governor. The best way to go about that is to go out to our Facebook page, which is MN National Guard Youth Programs. On there, we have a flyer, and they can follow the link. Their parents can sign them up to receive a letter from the governor showing his appreciation for their sacrifices.
And how long is that link open?
That is open the entire month of April. So the link will be open April 1st, which I can't believe is already this Saturday.
It's coming up.
Yes, it is.
So they go in there and they apply for it anytime during April, and and the governor will follow up with a letter to their military child.
That's right.
Pretty neat stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I understand you also have a photo contest.
Yes, we are encouraging people to send in photos. Again, if you visit our Facebook page, MN National Guard Youth Programs, there's a flyer out there that has the kind of parameters for that photo contest. But basically, it has to have some part of the uniform and a military kit in it. And this year, USO has, again, provided some great prizes for that. It's a really great partnership with them. And we look forward to looking at those photos and judging them every year. They really tug at our heartstrings.
And an art contest.
Art contest. We love to see the art that our military youth can do. So we ask them to create something that represents the military to them and send it on into us. And we award some prizes for that as well.
And Sarah, I want to come back to you. This open house at Mall of America is April 14th from noon to 6 p.m. Do military families have to register for this? How do they?
They don't. Actually, the open house is free and open to any Minnesota military family that's out there. So they are welcome to stop by and participate and enjoy the opportunity to come together united and celebrate with families facing similar circumstances and subject to other things. So,
Sarah, thank you. And thanks to the Mall of America for doing this. And Mel, just 30 seconds left.
Yep. Just one thing I do want to point out. The open house is open to everyone, but the wristbands and the Build-A-Bear experience, you had to have pre-registered for those.
So if they haven't registered by now?
There's a few wristbands left, but not many. They go pretty quick. But, yep, come on out to the open house. Everyone is welcome. We'd love to see you out there.
Sounds good. Ladies, I'd like to thank you for joining us today in the studio.
Thank you
for having us.
That was Melissa Egan, the Minnesota National Guard Child and Youth Program Coordinator, and Sarah Derman, Director of Community Relations from Mall of America. Joining me now is the Senior Enlisted Leader to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Chief Master Sergeant Lisa Erickson. Command Chief, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you, Tom. I'm happy to be back.
It's nice to see that we've got an airman in the top senior enlisted spot. How's that new job going?
Well, you know, I've been in the seat now just about 120 days, maybe a little bit more than that. And I tell you, every day I wake up and I think, I get to do this today. I mean, I've had so many great opportunities throughout my military career, but really this is the icing on the cake because I get to do so many cool things that I could have never imagined. You know, like going to Croatia, going to Norway. I've had some development opportunities and really just spending such great time with the soldiers and airmen of the Minnesota National Guard. Who can beat that job?
You know, I'm guessing you've met some incredible people that serve the Minnesota National Guard, both on both sides, soldiers and airmen.
Yep, both sides, soldiers and airmen. And it's so exciting because, you know, there's a lot of new kids in the Air Guard at the 148th that I've never met. So I'll be excited to get up there and see them. I knew a lot of them, but and then meeting all the new soldiers throughout the National Guard, and, of course, spending time with my friends at the 133rd, which we've been doing a lot of because they've got a lot of things going on.
Well, these things are busy everywhere these days. And yes. I understand that you're spending a little time this week at the Camp Ripley Training Center, one of the best training facilities in the country.
Oh, isn't that right? We were driving up here to the North Range, myself and Command Sergeant Major George Jensen. We're here for the Minnesota Army National Guard's Best Warrior Competition. We got 27 competitors from the Minnesota Army National Guard, and that includes three of our Canadian Royal Regina rifle soldiers and four Croatian soldiers as well. And they started their competition this morning. They're rotating around to multiple events. Right now, as we sit here, I'm at the North Range, and we've got two people out there going through the range right now. We watched the ruck march this morning. It's a 7-mile run. And I'm telling you, these kids, and well, they're not all kids, but these soldiers, they've got some grit, that's for sure. But what a great time to be at Camp Ripley and see what warriors we have in our service right now.
Springtime up there, Command Chief, and it's just going to get busier and busier all summer, isn't it?
It is, it is. But it's such a great facility, and they're ready. They're ready for this snow to be gone and to take on a lot of that summer AT that they get to do up here. So, yeah.
Chief,
we've
got about a minute left, but I understand there's some exciting things going on with what they call DeVarty, Division Artillery, coming up.
Yeah. Yes, Division Artillery, DeVarty. Of course, they always have exciting things coming up, but who doesn't have exciting things coming up, right?
Well, I'm just wondering if you've gotten a chance to visit them when they're practicing at all, but if you haven't, I'm sure you will.
Oh, I haven't, but it's on my list of things to do. You know, we're trying to get where we can visit everybody up here at Camp Ripley. That way we can spend time with them after hours as well and get to know them. We've seen the MP company. We're coming up to see the MedDet. Also, I've been at the 133rd a lot, and I'm coming up to the 148th. They have a big inspection coming up, and I'll be up there visiting them after their inspection in May. So, yeah.
I'll bet your time is just flying, Command Chief.
Yeah, it is. But the 148th is celebrating their 75th anniversary this year. We can't go without giving them a shout-out for that. So they've got some big things planned this fall for that.
Yes, ma'am. I'd like to thank you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
All right. Thank you.
That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Chief Master Sergeant Lisa Erickson. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Director Pat Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, Dr. Richard Stone, Sarah Derman, Mall of America, Melissa Egan from the Minnesota National Guard's Youth Programs, Chief Master Sergeant Lisa Erickson, Commissioner Larry Herkey from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we talk about the 34th DeVarty and meet the new Senior Administrative Officer for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.